On this third day of August, 2011, in San Diego, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 3, entitled Karma Yoga. And we are in text 24. I think we're 24. Yes, 24. Yeah. Text 24. Utside yuri me loka.
Utside yuri me loka.
Nakuryam karma chedaham.
Nakuryam karma chedaham.
Sankadasa chakartasyam. Upahanyam imapaja. If I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. Purport. Varna Sankara is unwanted population which disturbs the peace of the general society. In order to check this social disturbance, there are prescribed rules and regulations by which the population can automatically become peaceful and organized for spiritual progress in life. When Lord Krishna descends, naturally he deals with such rules and regulations in order to maintain the prestige and necessity of such important performances. The Lord is the father of all living entities. And if the living entities are misguided, indirectly the responsibility goes to the Lord. Therefore, whenever there is general disregard of regulative principles, the Lord himself descends and corrects the society. We should, however, note carefully that although we have to follow in the footsteps of the Lord, we still have to remember that we cannot imitate him. Following and imitating are not on the same level. We cannot imitate the Lord by lifting Govardhan Hill, as the Lord did in his childhood. It is impossible for any human being. We have to follow his instructions, but we may not imitate him at any time. The Srimad Bhagavatam 10:33-30-31 affirms, Naitat samachaye jatu manasyapi yanishwaraha vinashyat jatadan maudhyad yatarudrob di jambisham ishwaranam bachak satyam tatayava charitam kuchit tesham yat svatvacho yuktam buddhimams tat samacharet. One should simply follow the instructions of the Lord and his empowered servants. Their instructions are all good for us, and any intelligent person will perform them as instructed. However, one should guard against trying to imitate their actions. One should not try to drink the ocean of poison in imitation of Lord Shiva. We should always consider the position of the Ishwaras, or those who can actually control the movements of the sun and the moon, as superior. Without such power, one cannot imitate the Ishwaras, who are super powerful. Lord Shiva drank poison to the extent of swallowing an ocean. But if any common man tries to drink even a fragment of such poison, he will be killed. There are many pseudo-devotees of Lord Shiva who want to indulge in smoking ganja, marijuana, and similar intoxicating drugs, forgetting that by so imitating the acts of Lord Shiva, they are calling death very near. Similarly, there are some pseudo-devotees of Lord Krishna who prefer to imitate the Lord in his Rasa Leela, or dance of love, forgetting their inability to lift Govardhan Hill. It is best, therefore, that one not try to imitate the powerful, but simply follow their instructions, nor should one try to occupy their posts without qualification. There are so many incarnations of God without the power of the Supreme Godhead. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So here Krishna is giving an argument why one should perform their prescribed duties. And he's saying, even I perform them. Even I follow them. And he's referring here to especially his Dwarka Leela, where he took the role of a householder, although an unusual one with 16,108 queens, but still in every instance he was following the prescribed duties of household life. He was taking care that the children were properly maintained, the wives were protected, he got everyone married and performed all different samskaras at the proper time. Narada Muni saw that when he went and visited. He was amazed that Krishna is doing all these things, just like a householder. But here he explains one of the reasons why, that he's giving a good example. So part of this instruction he quoted from the 10th canto is that we should follow the activities of the powerful personalities when they comport with their instructions. These powerful personalities such as Lord Shiva and of course Lord Krishna, they're not really bound by any stricture of Shastra. They're beyond that. They're so powerful, they create the Shastra. And when they so-called violate it, just as when Krishna violated the ethical rules not to dance with other men's wives in the middle of the night, there was a special reason for that. It's a obeying the higher law of pure devotion. And it's even explained in the Bhagavad Gita that it's only, you know, the subtle bodies that went out. You know, the spiritual bodies of the gopis that went out. And the men saw their wives sleeping in their beds. That's also said in one place in the Krishna book and in the 10th canon. So the whole thing is beyond the normal variety of the normal ethical rules, moral rules. But there are many times when Krishna does follow those things. But sometimes he breaks it. And whenever he breaks the rules, it's always for the special care or special need of a devotee. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was observing the rules and regulations. He had promised not to fight, that he gave Duryodhana his whole army, and he said, "I will not fight." You know. So Duryodhana thought, "Oh, I got the better deal. I have the whole army here, and Krishna's not even going to fight." He knew Krishna was very powerful. I got it made, right? So this is the demon's calculation. But when push came to shove, and Bhishma Dev was accused of not fighting to his full capability because he really favored the other side, Bhishma was the great-grandfather of the Kuru dynasty, of which really the Pandavas and both sides belong. But he saw, you know, he was a devotee, and the Pandavas were great devotees, and he knew that Duryodhana's side was really in the wrong here, having usurped the throne meant for Yudhishthira. And yet, due to circumstances, he was on the side of Duryodhana. So Duryodhana, you know, as the battle was progressing, he accused Bhishma Dev of not trying his best because he really favored the other side. So now this is a very great insult for a Kshatriya, that he's somehow throwing the fight. You know, he's not trying. So Bhishma, "I will fight so strongly the next day that I will kill Arjuna unless Krishna breaks his promise. I will force Krishna to either break his promise or see his dearest friend killed." And Bhishma was this powerful fighter. So it so happened that Arjuna, at the end of the day, I think he had to get off his chariot or something. Anyway, he was under attack from Bhishma, and he was about to be killed when the chariot was broken, and Krishna stepped off, took up the chariot wheel, and he was about to kill Bhishma Dev himself. And Bhishma's famous painting, he's standing there, you know, "Yes, kill me, because he's a worshipable lord." And then the conch shells blew. The conch shell, they had the very strict Kshatriya code, at least at the beginning of the fight. Gradually it degraded till the end, till Ashwatthama, he was killing children, which is completely forbidden in Vedic culture. But anyway, that's another story. But at this point, as soon as the conch shells blew, the fighting for the day was over, everybody put down their weapons, and then they would meet in each other's tents and comport with each other, the opposite sides. I said, "Oh, you fought very nicely over there in that phalanx." You know, this is how they would. Then the next day, as soon as the conch shells blew again, go at it, you know, fighting to the death. So Krishna didn't, of course, kill Bhishma, but he broke his promise. He fought. So that's not very good. You know, he promised something and he broke his promise. But he did it to protect his dear friend Arjuna for the higher reasons of rasa, for the relationship. So the point here is that, now, one thing I'd like to call your attention to, or the point of this purport is that, you know, the difference between following the footsteps and imitating. Following the footsteps and imitating. So following in the footsteps really means this idea that, yeah, we follow them, when they are acting according to the rules of the Shastra, which Krishna himself speaks. But in these other things, we worship. We worship Krishna, dance of the rasa dance. We try to understand that we serve it, but we, heaven forbid, that we try to imitate Krishna in the rasa dance. That's the complete downfall. You understand? So, what is Krishna saying here now? I call your attention, if you can all turn to text 40 and 41. First chapter, text 40 and 41, where Arjuna is giving an argument for not fighting, based on the same idea that this Varna Sankara will be created. He's saying here that, 39, 40, 41. Kulakshye pranashyanti. With the destruction of the dynasty, so all these men are going to be killed and the dynasty will be destroyed. The eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. Rest of the family means the women and the old men and the children. So then what happens? Text 40, which is a memorable verse, by the way, if you're interested in memorizing Bhagavad Gita verses. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood comes unwanted progeny. The same word, Varna Sankara, the last word in this verse, text 40, is the same word that Krishna uses in text 24, isn't it? Yes, Sankarasya. You see, Varna Sankara. Now, Varna Sankara, the word actually means children that come from breaking of the rules of the Varnas. The Varnas are the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. And there's very strict rules because the idea is you want to have the best population in society. So you want especially exalted Brahmin families to marry into another Brahmin man or marry a Brahmin woman. So they understood, they didn't call them genes or anything. The child there will have exalted karma, genes from both sides. And so the chances are the child will grow up nicely. Plus all the rules and regulations will be followed, you see. But if that's broken, if the Brahmins are unqualified, or if there are no qualified Brahmins around, or if a Sudra man marries a Brahmin woman, then things can get bent out of shape. This is the rules in the Vedic culture. So Krishna is saying all these men will be killed, the women will be unprotected, they'll be Varna Sankara. This is what Arjuna is saying. And then what happens in text 41? Sankaro Nanakayeva. An increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life, both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because of the performance for the offering, that food and water entirely stopped. So this is referring to the Shraddha ceremony and other ceremonies that help to, deliver one's ancestors. So he's making the argument that society will be destroyed if I fight, you see. But Krishna is saying, no, Arjuna, that's your duty. That will not cause, rather, society will be harmed if you don't fight and your brother is not enthroned. Then you'll have Adharma personified as Duryodhana ruling society, which is what was happening already. So Krishna is making exactly the opposite argument. If I didn't perform my duty, then there would be Sankarasya. I would create an unwanted population and would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. So the point Krishna is making here is that the performance of one's duty in Varnashram is all important. If one is, as we mentioned last night, if one is involved in society deeply, in material society, and you're on the gradual path of progress that's governed by the rules of Varnashram Dharma. Now, the Krishna consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada gave it to us, is not ultimately bound by those rules. There are many things that we do that have nothing to do with Varnashram. Like I point out, Harinam Sankirtan. There's no Varna and Ashram rules there. Basically, the only thing we do is that if the women in the temple, they stay on one side, we stay on the other. That's it. Otherwise, Hare Krishna. It doesn't matter if you're a Shudra, if you're, Brahmin, or whatever. Everyone's chanting Hare Krishna together. It's completely transcendental activity. And many of our activities are like that. But some are not, just like the deity worship. Well, you have to be brahminically trained. You have to come to a certain standard. You have to have be able to, chant the mantras and be in second initiate to go on the altar. That part of the rule we try to maintain. We maintain that. Because the deity worship is a very strict You know, but here Krishna is talking about how the importance of setting a good example. That's really what he's saying. He's giving himself as the example, and he's telling Arjun that you also are a leader in society. You have to set a good example. So the takeaway from all of this is that we should follow the instructions of the Shastra. When Krishna performs activities that are outside Varnashram, that are transcendental, lifting Govardhan Hill, dancing with the gopis, we worship those, you know, you think we don't try to follow in the footsteps. And we shouldn't take advantage of things. Now, this thing with Lord Shiva, this is true, that you find people who worship Lord Shiva, and they find out that he smoked ganja, you know, and that's, I'll say, great, now we can smoke marijuana. So the same kind of cheating is there for Krishna's leela. Oh, Krishna was very loose with women, we can be loose with women. It's all part of the leela. We just remember Krishna. That's completely bogus. You don't advance toward any kind of transcendental position in that way. And it tends to, as happened historically, to misguide so many people about what real Gaudiya Vaishnavism is, what real Bhakti Yoga is. Bhakti Yoga is based, always remember these things, on the principles of Vairagya and Vidya, and detachment and knowledge. That's Lord Chaitanya's teachings, as Krishna's teachings. Vairagya, Vidya, Nija, Bhakti Yoga, Shikshat. And for the sake of explaining this, or teaching this principle of Bhakti Yoga, based on Vairagya, detachment, and Vidya, transcendental knowledge, everything follows from that. So there were so many qualities that we were meant to develop, and they serve as an example for our own community and for example of society, that one can actually live an upright, ethical, saintly life, even in the middle of the society. It's not some myth, it's not some possibility. So that's part of the book, the teaching here. Okay, any questions on this verse? Krishna's describing how he's setting a good example. Okay, now, in general, again, Krishna's saying how one should perform one's activities as an example to others. Text 25. Sakta karmanya vidvangso yata kuvanti bharata kuyad vidvangsa tha saktash chikishu loka sangraham. As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to results, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path. Purport. A person in Krishna consciousness and a person not in Krishna consciousness are differentiated by different desires. A Krishna conscious person does not do anything which is not conducive to development of Krishna consciousness. He may even act exactly like the ignorant person who is too much attached to material activities. But one is engaged in such activities for the satisfaction of his sense gratification, whereas the other is engaged for the satisfaction of Krishna. Therefore, the Krishna-conscious person is required to show the people how to act and how to engage the results of action for the purpose of Krishna consciousness. And this is actually where, again, Varnashram comes in. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to set up, you know, we haven't been able to do it very well yet, ideal Varnashram communities, which must be rural and is centered on cow protection and you know, working the oxen and all of this. The simple living, high thinking, you know, as an example, and of course self-sufficiency is there, you know. As these are developing to some degree in different parts of the world by devotees. But it's so important now. We can see that this highly commercialized, highly technologized society is spinning toward self-destruction. I mean, you know, this whole thing with the climate change and the resources and poisoning the water, the oceans, and everywhere you look, there, you know, the graph of how this world is going is dangerous and frightening, you know. And it's all due to this artificial standard of living, you know, based on a complete lack of real spiritual understanding. And everything is following to its natural conclusion. You know, like greed. You know, greed is spoken of in the Bhagavad Gita as one of the results of the mode of passion, which is so prominent. The mode of passion is characterized by unending desire to enjoy, accumulate wealth, and enjoy one's senses and dominate the resources of the earth. Okay, so they develop that. And you develop technologies by which you can do it even better and more, you know. And you know, big mining operations. And, you know, I was just reading, you know, what happens to all these electronics? You know, every year, there's a new generation of iPod, iPad, computers coming out. You know, I've been using computers since 1983. Okay, so what happened to all those computers that I used in 83, 84, 85? Well, they're all gone. Well, where did they go? You know, some of them went to Africa. You know, there's this whole, you know, where, you know, this stuff is toxic. There's poison metals in there. There, you know, lead is mercury, you know, just in and of itself. So they donate it. There's this whole scam where these big companies that would operate their computer, they'll donate the old computers to Ghana somewhere or Nigeria. So they go there, people can't use them, you know. So they end up in a dump somewhere, but they donated it. It means they basically just offloaded them over there, you know. And now that's just, you know, poisoning that area of the world, you know. It's just, there's a cost for all this stuff. You know, where do these rare earths come from? What about the poor people mining those earths and getting, you know, poisoned by it and all this stuff? So this is going on, and it's all the result of, okay, big companies, they can marshal so many billions and hire this, move these, you know, these things. It's all simply a natural result. So in contrast to that, complete contrast, is, you know, imagine a devotee community, you know, and there are communities something like this, where, yes, you have many householders, it may be a brahmachari ashram, and they're living off the land peacefully. You know, Hungary, they have something going on like that. In, you know, they have this farm community and temples also in the city. But it's basically, they're not, you know, they're not drinking any commercial milk, which is a big deal, because those poor cows are also slaughtered, you know, the dairy cows. You know, we hate that. What are we going to do? But if you can avoid that. So that kind of an organization or a manifestation of Krishna conscious philosophy is invaluable for society. You know, in Hungary they have that. People come and they see how the devotees are living. It has an effect on everybody's mentality. And they see they're living simply but very happily. You know, whereas a complicated life, so much anxiety to maintain it. You know, you can't keep it up, and it's the unnaturalness of it. You know, but here you live a simple life, depending on land and the cows. You know, the ideal, chanting Hare Krishna. Now, how is it possible? Because you're kind of, you know, you're hooked up to that reservoir of pleasure within. You know, it's unlimited, and then you can live. Look at the Goswamis, how simply they lived, but they were the richest in actual happiness in the world. So that's something of what Krishna is talking about. We do the same thing. We're also milking the cows. We're working, doing, but without attachment. Without attachment. So people, you know, they want to know, well, what do you guys got that we don't have? We're working with attachment. We're working in our regular job, but we're getting more and more miserable and strung out. You're also working hard, but you're not. What are you doing differently? Well, as Krishna says, it's the desires. The different desires, the motivation is everything. The motivation is everything. So this is, you know, Krishna's instruction. After all, this is karma yoga, activity. Activity. As you act, you know, people see how we act, how we behave. That's why achar, you know, the word acharya comes from the word achar, means behavior. If you're acting nicely, you know, your behavior is nicely, then your teaching and preaching will have an effect. It has an impact. Because people can see that you're living what you're, you know, teaching. So it all, you know, fits in. And, you know, the basic thing here is, you know, the idea of jagya, of acting for Krishna, giving the fruits off. And that you become, you don't develop attachment for the fruits of the activity. You develop attachment to the one who's enjoying the fruit of the activity, Krishna. Okay, any comments on text 25? Asakta and asakta. This is what we're trying to develop, this lack of attachment for the fruits. Okay, text 26. Nabuddhibedam janayed.
Nabuddhibedam janayed.
Agyanam karma sanginam.
Agyanam karma sanginam.
Joshiyet sarva karmani.
Joshiyet sarva karmani.
Vidvan yukta samacharan.
Vidvan yukta samacharan.
So as not to disrupt the minds of ignorant men attached to the fruitive results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion, he should engage them in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. Purport. Vedasya sarva ahameva vedya. That is the end of all Vedic rituals. So what that means is, by all the Vedas, I am to be known. This is from the 15th chapter, text 15, that first phrase. This is the end of all Vedic rituals. All rituals, all performances of sacrifices, and everything that is put into the Vedas, including all direction for material activities, are meant for understanding Krishna, who is the ultimate goal of life. But because the conditioned souls do not know anything beyond sense gratification, they study the Vedas to that end. But through fruitive activities and sense gratification, regulated by Vedic rituals, one is gradually elevated to the Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a realized soul in Krishna consciousness should not disturb others in their activities or understanding, but he should act by showing how the results of all work can be dedicated to the service of Krishna. The learned Krishna conscious person may act in such a way that the ignorant person working for sense gratification may learn how to act and how to behave. Although the ignorant man is not to be disturbed in his activities, a slightly developed Krishna conscious person may directly be engaged in the service of the Lord without waiting for other Vedic formulas. For this fortunate man, there is no need to follow the Vedic rituals, because by direct Krishna consciousness, one can have all the results one would otherwise derive from following one's prescribed duties. So there's various audiences, you know, Prabhupada's speaking to here. Now, in our larger efforts to spread Krishna consciousness, there's this food relief, right? We used to have something here. We had a truck, Food for Life, right? So now oftentimes, you know, we would go out and people wouldn't really know that this is prasadam, but it is prasadam and it's good. So, but in this way, people are seeing these Hare Krishnas are caring about people, you know, in the best way that they can really understand, feeding the hungry, you know. That's good. That's important. Prabhupada wanted that, especially in Mayapur and the Holy Land, but throughout the world, you know, this is part of what we do. We invite people to come, take a feast. Sometimes we give out, like, this free, you know, the festival, Jagannath Rath Yatra, the free food booth. Anyone can come. So, in this way, we're spreading this idea, this simple idea of giving. And it's in the Krishna conscious context. So first of all, people are taking prasadam, which is spiritualizing, and they're becoming attracted to devotees who are exemplary. Here they are, you know, doing this welfare work. They're not sure exactly what, you know, they can understand the food distribution. The knowledge, may they understand, you know, so much. And the chanting, that's a mystery. But food distribution, okay. So in this way, there's a contact there, and there's an effort to attract people on even on that basis, on the basis that this is a pious organization that's doing good work. That's okay. But of course, at the first ability, as Prabhupada says, if someone is slightly Krishna conscious, they can be directly engaged. And this was like the genius of preachers like Jayananda. You know, you hear he was like a pioneer, a saint in the movement, you know, early on at 67 to 77. There's 10 years. And he would get, you know, people off the street. You know, the hippie days in San Francisco, he's building a Rath cart. And, you know, and somebody's coming down from Canada to check out the scene in Haight-Ashbury. And he invites him off the street. Hey, can you help me with this? I'm trying to, you know, fix this, wheel. You know, you know how to use a screwdriver, right? So, yeah, sure, I'll help you, you know, because it's the mood of the day. You know, and so before long, he has that person help him with the car. A few hours later, take prasadam, you know, wonderfully cooked. Oh, made a friend. Who is the friend? Jayapataka Maharaj. That's how he became a devotee. He walked in to help Jayananda use him to fix the carts. Comes a devotee. So exactly like this. Don't ask someone to give up, their work. But have them engage them in Krishna service. And in this way, they get into the vortex, you know, the loving, as I said, the loving network of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and become purified. And you go way beyond karma yoga. So this is a very active movement. You know, we're not cloistered away. We don't hide away in the secret places in the mountains and the jungles. In the middle of the city here. And, you know, this is the idea. Juhu, you know, the middle of Bombay. You know, it's going on. Now, there are also rural areas, you know, we may go. But the idea is that you can work in Krishna consciousness and give others a chance to work in Krishna consciousness. And even if someone just works a little bit, they don't even know what they're doing. That agata sukriti that they've developed, even unknowingly, credits that will eventually fructify in them continuing their devotional service. It's often said that this agata sukriti, or unknown pious activity that produces bhakti, accumulates so that in previous life, so that we came to Krishna consciousness. Why is it so many thousands and thousands of books go out? Thousands and thousands of people are aware of us, but only a relative handful actually take up the process very seriously. Because there's some asset, previous life, that's now fructifying. And this book is fascinating. You know, you read about people reading this book, you know, cover to cover as soon as they found it. Others look at it and say, I can't understand what this is. Put it on the shelf. So that's there's never a time, you know, when we shouldn't try to reach out to as many people as possible. We don't know who is out there who can respond to this message. So we don't try to disrupt the minds of the ignorant, but engage them in Krishna conscious activity. Okay, any other discussion here? Or we're going to leave the next one for tomorrow, or for Monday. It's a very important verse. Bhakate Kriya Manani. And we're going to proceed to... Yes, sir?
I was just curious about the farm community and working hard on land. It seems like that would be Shudra activity. And then I also heard the other day someone said that Prabhupada meant the temples to be places for Brahmins to reside. I was just wondering about those two things.
Well, yeah. I mean, the temples in any group of people, including devotees, you have some who are inclined to intellectual work, and others who may be able to make money, and so you know the four varnas are there. But especially in the farm communities, the varnas are more pronounced. You have you need some Brahmins. I'm thinking like of Gita Nagari. Okay, I remember Gita Nagari being established in the 80s. We would go out there once a month. I was working as an editor for BTG, and the editor in chief resided in Gita Nagari. His name was Satsurup Das Goswami, and he was writing the Prabhupada Lilamrita that we read. But he was still the editor, so we would go out and visit, spend a few days at the farm. So there were the cows, and you had the oxen. Being used. Of course, they did have a way that they were making money. Also, it's supported because they're right in the middle of Pennsylvania. There's a lot of expenses, taxes. But the idea was that the key element is in any of these communities there has to be this strong morning program. It's not that I'm just a cowherd. I just take care of the cows and that's all I do, and I chant Hare Krishna whenever I can. That's not going to work. Prabhupada intended these farms to be places where the morning program was going on, and everybody met on that basis and chanted their rounds nicely and had kirtan, listened to Bhagavatam class. No matter what varna you're in, you listen to Bhagavatam class, and then a lot of hard work during the day with that in that consciousness. So it's not a question of sudra work. I mean, sudras can join this movement, and they may do a lot of manual labor. But their consciousness is meant to become more and more, Krishna conscious, full of remembrance of Krishna. So again, it's the consciousness that you do something with that makes all the difference. So yes, Prabhupada said that if someone is living in the city temples and they can't follow the program, they're not inclined to book distribution, to deity worship, or any of the other things that normally would be going on in the temples, then they can go to the farm and do a lot of hard work for Krishna. But still, 16 rounds have to be there, the four regs, the Bhagavatam, That's all part of it. Because without that, you're right. Nobody's satisfied there. You're not satisfied taking care of the cows. Nobody is spontaneously, attracted to herd the cows. Not in this society or any society. you become spontaneously attracted to serve Krishna. And then whatever service is there, herding the cows, milking the cows, it can become completely blissful. But those farms, it's very difficult to do it in the middle of a society like America. What happens when the kids grow up, and they, the electronics are there, they're getting on the internet, they're driving in cars here and there, and they don't necessarily want to be farmers, they want to go do something else, And so it's hard to do it. The ones that are doing it, like in Indonesia, Bhakti Raghava Swami was here, right? He talked about Varnashram. That's his whole life. He actually went to school, got a PhD, as far as I know, in agrarian management and all kinds of stuff, agriculture. But he's got this group in Indonesia, really out in the country, in the jungle, and they have a full-on Varnashram program there. All based and centered on Krishna. In South America, there's a farm. I forget the sannyasi's name who started it up, and they're self-sufficient, organic, very pure, up in the mountains and everything. We had a devotee here. I don't think any of you were here at the time. He was Brazilian, and he was doing deity worship for a while. Then he went there, got married, and living on that farm. So, once Krishna's in the center and there's strong Krishna consciousness, any kind of work can be done, and you can be happy with it. When Krishna is not in the middle, no one is ever happy, no matter what varna you're in. You want to go out and do more things. You can't control your senses. This dissolves. The thing that holds everything together is a strong Krishna consciousness. Then everything falls into place. I wanted to use a few minutes of the time to maybe go over some of the things, because we have some new people and some old people who may not remember. And that is, just the morning program. I know that that's part of Bhakta Alec's program, but it's still, there's never enough of that. Just like this morning, we were reviewing some samsara prayers. So my feeling is that the more that you understand what's going on in that morning program, which is basically the language, the more you'll get out of it, the more a richer experience it will be. And it'll be deeper. So why don't we just go over some of that? And we'll start with that prayer we say so many times during the day. Namaham Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale. What does that actually mean? First of all, the word namaha, I'll just go into this. You've heard this before, but this is important for the new fellas. Namaha. Now this word is like legion in India. Namaste. The Namaste Yoga Center. I don't know if what you find down in OBB. What is that namaste? Namaste means obeisances to you. Te is the you. Namas is the bowing down. But there's a very deep meaning to this word namaha. And there's different levels of obeisance. There's just like the hello, like we say in America, namaste, and that they say in the restaurant, the waitress will say to you, if you go to an Indian restaurant, oh, namaste, Doesn't mean much of anything, but namaha, real obeisances, is with what we call dandavat. The word, what is it called? Suffix vat in Sanskrit means like. Like a danda. A danda is a pole or a rod. Dandavat. So like to fall down like a rod. Very few of us actually fall down like that, because you might hurt your nose or whatever, so we carefully go down. But the idea is you're meant to be full on, and not just like this or not just like that and not just even bending, but full on, obeisances, dandavat. So I won't get into the technicalities of that, but it's supposed to be internal as well, not just the different limbs that you're offering, but you're also your mind, and your intelligence, and your heart, and your voice, and everything. That's dandavat. So who are you offering to? Well, the person who you're bowing down to. It's always to a person, or personified, like the Govardhan Hill or something, but it's a person. So the word namaha, according to the Padma Purana, I discovered this in this the BBT book that was published some years ago. It's divided into two syllables, na and ma, and they both have meaning. Na means not, and ma means mine. You know? Not mine, but yours. My body, my soul, my words, they belong to you, O Krishna. They don't belong to me. This, in other words, it's an expression of surrender. So that's how we say nama om. The om is, you know, sacred syllable om. Vishnu, I'm offering my body, mind, and word to you, Srila Prabhupada. You know, when we say nama om. Or we bow down to the deities. Because ultimately, they're not our own. The whole problem we have is this false ego that we're thinking this body is mine. But actually, what do we own? Everything belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to God. He created it all. And our natural happy state is using this body and everything else we own in the service of Krishna. Just like the happy state of the hand is to be serving the body. You know, it's natural. So, a few more minutes, we'll have darshan. So, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. So Vishnu Padaya means two things. It means at the feet of Vishnu, right? Vishnu is Krishna. Vishnu means the all-pervading Lord, the one who pervades everything. And Padaya means at the feet. Padaya also means the position. Obeisance to you, O Srila Prabhupada, who are in the position of Vishnu. In other words, you're such a perfect servant that you represent him perfectly, and we can worship. We worship you like as if we're worshiping God, and Krishna is pleased, and we get all the blessings. That's the idea. So, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya and Krishna Preshtaya. Preshta means dear. So, you who are dear to Krishna. Now, the whole point here is to become dear to Krishna, dear to God at every moment. So, he's the dearest because he's the most surrendered servant. So, Nama Om, offer my obeisance to Krishna Preshtaya, Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Preshtaya, Bhutale. Where? Bhu is the earth. So, Tale, on the surface of the earth. You're the most dear. Now, of course, this mantra was composed by Srila Prabhupada for his disciples in the 60s so that they could offer him obeisances. So at that time, he was walking on the earth. But we still say the thing because he's still here on the earth, you know, in so many forms. So that's why it's Bhutale. So obeisance to you, Srila Prabhupada, who are at Vishnu's lotus feet, who have the position of Vishnu, who are dear to Krishna, most dear to Krishna on this earth. Who is it? Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami. You know. Now this prayer can also be used for other gurus. I think it's kind of, you know. But here it's for Prabhupada. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami, iti namine, who is named, namine, thus, Bhaktivedanta. Now what does the name mean? Everything has a meaning. Bhaktivedanta. But Veda means knowledge, anta means end. So Vedanta is the end of knowledge. There's a book called Vedanta Sutra, giving the essence of Vedic philosophical knowledge, written by Vyasadeva. But here, the bhakti part means that, oh, the end of knowledge is bhakti. It all culminates, just as Krishna says here, of all the Vedas I am to be known. We just read that, right? So all the knowledge culminates in knowledge of Krishna, culminates in devotion to Krishna. That's Prabhupada's name. AC stands for Abhay Charanaravinda. That was his given name, Abhay Charan, became Abhay Charanaravinda. Das, when he was initiated, means he who is at the fearless lotus feet of Krishna. Fearless means the giving fearlessness. So there's a lot in there. Swami means controller of the senses. All right, and we're going to go over the second one. So now this one really describes Srila Prabhupada's specific relation to the parampara and his special activities. Namaste, again, namaste, I'm basing to you. Saraswate Deve. Now, Saraswati means coming in the line from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada's own spiritual master. Saraswati especially is a name for learned, because Saraswati is the goddess of learning. Deve, who is a great devotee on the level of the gods, you know. Saraswati Deve. Gaura Vani Pracharine. Now, Gaura refers to Lord Chaitanya. Gaura means golden, the golden avatar. Right, so that's Lord Chaitanya. Vani is words. Pracharane, you can easily remember, preach. Prabhupada said preach or teaching. Pracharane. You are preaching or teaching the message, the words of Lord Chaitanya. That's the qualification for any guru in the line coming from Lord. He has to give the same words, the same teachings. Can't deviate. So namaste, Saraswati Deve, O you coming in the line of Saraswati. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who are preaching or teaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and what's the result? Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine. That's one big compound word. You can do that in Sanskrit. So when you see these big compounds, or small compounds, you start at the end. And what it says is, Tarine means delivering. Who are you delivering? Remember, we had this word in this morning, Samsara Dalam. So delivering, Paschata Desh. So Desh means place or land. Paschata means west, the western lands. Because this was Prabhupada's unique thing that he did. He came west. He didn't just preach in India. He had the courage, fearless, Abhaicharanat, to come west and to this strange land, you know, New York City, the heart of Kali Yuga illusion, and still preach the words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in so doing, he saved the people in the west, namely us, from two things, nirvishesh and shunyavadi. So nirvishesh means no details, no variety. Vishesh means variety. Nir is a prefix, means not. So nirvishesha. These are the famous impersonalists, mayavadis, who think that the ultimate reality is Brahman, which is simply the white light, undifferentiated. Beyond Krishna is the white light. Krishna is a manifestation of Brahman. This is what they say. So in other words, it's all illusion. The deity, the prasadam, you know, all of these varieties, relationships, it's all illusion. No, that's anathema to the devotees. Krishna is the source of Brahman. He says right here, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. I am the basis of Brahman. So he's saving us from that. Srila Prabhupada is saving. Throughout the Bhagavad Gita and all his books and all his lectures, he'll come, you know, there'll be this strong combat against Mayavad. That's nirvishesh. And then the other one is shunyavad. Shunya means void. And vad means philosophy. So there's two philosophies, nirvishesh vad and shunyavad. This is especially the Buddhists. They say, you know, even worse, if you know, more extreme than the nirvisheshavadis, is that there's nothing out there. You don't even exist. The ultimate reality is nothingness, you know. And once you realize that, you'll be peaceful. Nirvana, you know. As far as I can tell, that's... And so that's also, that's you know, all-devouring, you know, horrible philosophy. The real danger in this world are these false philosophies. Hedonism is a philosophy. Everyone has a philosophy. They don't even know they have a philosophy. Hedonism. You know, enjoy as much as I can, as long as I can, because you only go around once. There's no karma, there's no sin. You know, that's really where it leads to. It's a philosophy, but it's a wrong philosophy. It's a self-destructive philosophy. So the same thing is true for this nirvishesha and shunyavadi, paschata deshatarini. So that's the Prabhupada's pranam mantra. Yeah.
Did you say that the name Vishnu means all?
As far as I remember, the all-pervading one, yeah. Okay. Now, I put it into a little poem, English. I bow to A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, whose mission is to teach the art of purely loving God. Upon this earth, to Krishna, no one on this earth can be more dear than he, for at Sri Krishna's lotus feet he dwells eternally. Obeisances to you, O prime disciple of your Lord, Sri Saraswati Thakur, wielder of the preaching sword. By preaching Lord Chaitanya's words, you've saved these western lands from voidism, impersonalist creeds, and all such shams. Kind of stretch a little bit. So you can memorize the English and then you also know what's going on. Okay, any other questions? I'll test John this on Monday. See how much you remember. Nama Om Vishnu. Now you get the nice songbook? It has word for word meanings for even Prabhupada's pranam mantra. I made sure that produce that songbook that everything has these word for words. So you're meant to study that. So next time you utter it, it starts to, you know, resound in your head what Nama Om Vishnu Padaya really means. That's why we pray every day, right? We say the English, Shri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakati Sadma Vandomi Savadanama Te. So Vandomi means to bow down. You know, I bow down. Savadan, with great attention, with great care and attention. Savadana, you'll find it in the signs in Bengal, right? It means watch out, drive carefully, pay attention. So this paying attention is what we're meant to do at all stages of our devotion. A devotional service. But when bowing down, he's saying, bow down with great care and attention. understand what you're saying. You're also supposed to say, not just bow, but also say the mantra. That's part of it. You'll find that in Nectar Devotion. So there's all these things to learn, and that's what we're here for. Okay, let's adjourn and get ready for Kirtan. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.